Hello and welcome to the Cloud Solution Architect podcast, where we talk to Azure architects from across the globe and discuss interesting and creative Azure solutions. This is your host, Anand Kumar. I work as a Cloud Solution Architect for Microsoft in the New York City region. For more Cloud Solution Architect podcast episodes, animated Azure videos, and simplified how-to content articles on Azure, please check out www.azuremonk.com. That's www.azuremonk.com. In this episode, we have with us Julian So, who works as a Cloud Solution Architect in Microsoft US in the West Coast. We discuss several things from how smart trash cans are revolutionizing the city and county of San Francisco, to how biking helps Julian keep up with the latest and greatest on Azure. Without further ado, let's get to the show. Hey, Julian, welcome to the show. We're very, very excited and happy to have you on the show.
No, thank you very much, Anand. Thank you for the invite. I've been very happy to be here and chat with you today and looking forward to it.
Awesome. Julian, so I looked into your LinkedIn profile, and I must say you have a very impressive LinkedIn profile. I know you've been the CIO of Washington State Department of Revenue. You've worked on multiple clouds in Azure, and also you've sort of published a book as well, right? So can you walk us through your experience in Azure and your past experience? How did you exactly get into the Azure space?
Great. Well, thank you very much, Anand, for actually even checking out my LinkedIn profile. And I've got a pretty interesting and varied background from my experience standpoint. But to your point, Anand, a lot of what I was fortunate enough to be able to undertake is what shaped what I'm doing today and how it kind of got me here. So in the past, I think like a lot of us, a lot of the CSAs actually have operational roles, whether it is in management or whether it is in IT operations, whether like a database administrator or a developer or even infrastructure. Those are all skills that and experiences that I was fortunate enough to amass as part of my career. And it's actually served me pretty well in my Azure role today. In terms of how I got here, I think I was very fortunate enough from a Microsoft perspective. I joined Microsoft a number of years ago as an account technology strategist. So it is an all-up position that covers all of Microsoft technologies. And I was tapped to join the Microsoft Cloud Group back then, starting with Office 365. So I was fortunate enough to join the cloud initiative at Microsoft from the very beginning, even pre-Office 365, right? It's when we have the, a lot of things that we're kind of dabbling into the cloud. So I joined Office 365 group. And then after that, it was a natural progression to join the Azure group. So I was tapped to join the Azure group. And when the CSA group was being formed to help customers be successful, I applied for it and was one of the first few CSAs that was at that time, quote unquote, almost experimental in terms of trying to be more involved with customers and their projects. And because of my background with a lot of the operational roles in the past, they felt it was a good fit. So I was fortunate enough to actually end up being a CSA role. And that's where I've been ever since for the last 3 years.
Awesome. That's really impressive. One thing I know, Julian, is that even inside the Cloud Solution Architect roles, you've handled multiple verticals as well, right? So you've been in the infrastructure space, you've been in the data and AI space. So I know you've seen a vast variety of projects and solutions you've worked on in your Microsoft career. Is there a particular solution which you're, very proud about? And so can you walk us through how that solved a business problem?
Oh, definitely, Anand. And that's also another good point that you brought up. I think for our guests who are listening to the podcast, they may or may not know that there are different CSAs within the Microsoft ecosystem. And the different type of CSAs really evolved with the evolution of the service in Azure as well. So like the industry, when we look at the cloud initially, we always know that it started off with things like, for example, software as a service, like in Office 365. And then we ventured into, as an industry, we ventured into infrastructure as a service, a lot of things that we have in Azure and AWS, for example. And back then it was a lot easier from an Azure perspective to really focus on, moving VMs into the cloud. So that's purely infrastructure as a service. We start dabbling into platforms as a service a little bit with SQL, for example, being a managed service inside of Azure. In fact, that's how Azure initially started. So we actually have a little bit of background and experience over there. And really, as you see today, as we are pushing the intelligent cloud capabilities, so things like, for example, IoT, AI, machine learning, for example, those are all things that are very different from infrastructure as a service. So having said that, the CSA role does has basically evolved to cover those three areas: infrastructure as a service, DevOps to address developers and their capabilities and the practice of developing software for the cloud, and then now with the AI, artificial intelligence, et cetera, being the third piece of it, the third specialty for Azure, that is how those three CSAs come into play to be able to cover all those technologies, because that set of capabilities has really broadened, and it's very difficult for one individual to cover all three. So I don't cover all three, but I was fortunate enough to. Because like I was mentioning earlier, I was one of the first few CSAs to join the team. As these roles come up and evolve, I was fortunate enough to experience each one of those roles over a period of time as they come up. So having said that, in my early days, and actually something I actually did continue working on until now, is really helping customers move infrastructure as a service into Azure. And that is a good repetitive and a well-known and well-documented process, because we've done a lot of that. But recently, I have a customer in the West here that has a very unique requirement for the infrastructure as a service. So they're using that as an example. We've worked with them on networking, everything works out well, but they actually have legacy hardware, physical hardware that's out of support. And they were busy kind of a support, trying to manage it. And they were really at risk because they don't really have a way to fail over to anything. The hardware is out of support. They can't really move anything. And even their software and the operating system, everything is, 32-bit, for example. The OS is out of support from a Windows perspective. And their solution provider was going to help them update their application layer. So I was working with them on application layer at first, but realized that it'll take a little bit more time. And on top of that, they were distracted trying to manage their existing environment, which had a lot of outages because of the legacy nature of the solution. So it took a while for us to actually step back and try to stabilize their current environment. We took their 32-bit operating system with the legacy software. We made a P2V, a physical to virtual conversion of it on premises. We had to go through multiple iterations of tweaking their images to be able to then have it run in Azure. So even as a company, Azure does not recommend that we run 32-bit software, but the software is already, the OS is already out of support anyways, and so by doing so, we were able to get them to at least a position where they're no longer reliant on legacy hardware. So it actually puts them in a better stage in terms of or a better place in terms of their solution, and it also frees up their time to start working on dealing with the modernization of their application layer. So that gave them the peace of mind, creates time for them to work on their modernization layer. So it really was taking a step back from the project, but then taking two steps forward. And right now, I'm happy to say that they are set to finish the modernization sometime in February of 2020. Now, the other extreme is we did work with another organization that is a little bit more ready to take on the advanced workload. So the other extreme will be working with the folks ready to adopt the intelligent cloud. So our AI, IoT, machine learning, big data analysis, for example, in Azure. So this customer in the West has two projects that are really exciting. One is to deploy smart trash cans, and that the smart trash can then sends data to Azure, and the customer is going to use Azure to analyze the data and also to stream the data and be able to identify trash cans that are either full, so the IoT devices sends the fill level, the temperature, as well as the orientation of the trash can, whether it's upright or not, and based on those three elements, a service call might be initiated. Now, if, like, say, there is no emergency service, like the can is not overturned, or the temperature is not high, meaning that nothing is rotting within the can, you know, the fill level itself would determine how their service trucks actually go about their routes to empty out the can. So they actually have dynamic route planning as well. So all that is an effort to be able to try to be smarter in terms of delivering service. And this city is, you know, it's got a little bit of a bad reputation, unfortunately, in terms of the cleanliness, even though it is a very prominent city. So this is definitely one way to help clean up the reputation. But at the same time, it really helps the city's residents. And that is really a great solution because it really helps. It helps showcase how Azure and our solution can help improve the community's lives of the people living in the community.
Wow, I love it, especially the smart trash can example. I think the real world impact for that is just phenomenal. Like, if I was a resident and if I had this technology, if my state was using this technology, I would be super thrilled, right? And I love the spectrum of experience that you brought about, right? So you talked about modernizing a legacy 32-bit application all the way up to smart trash cans. And I think that goes to show Azure is the perfect platform for all of the customer needs. So we meet the customer where they are. It's not sort of only for the born in cloud workloads or only for legacy. So we sort of cater to all of the requirements and workloads.
Right? Definitely, exactly.
Yeah. So for the listeners who are not aware, I have to say this, Julian is a passionate and professional cyclist at a whole different level, right? And if I remember correctly, you clock about 30,000 miles on your bike per year. I could be wrong, but yeah, if I remember correctly, that's the number, right? And so my question is, I know you've constantly, you work on sort of the cutting edge technologies. So how do you keep up with everything that's happening new in Azure at the same time not compromising on any of your fitness or your family goals?
Sounds good, Anand. Thank you very much. Anand, you flatter me. So for the listeners out there who are passionate cyclists as well, I just want to put into perspective that I'm not a professional cyclist. I wish I was. I'm an elite cyclist, so I do compete at elite level, so I don't necessarily get paid, so I don't go to the Tour de France, everything, even though I would love to. But, you know, that is definitely a different lifetime and a different goal for a different lifetime. I do clock a number of miles. You know, usually over 10,000, between 10 to 18,000 miles. 18 was my highest 1 year because, you know, I was really into it and working on some health and physical fitness goals that 1 year. So that was really my highest. But to your point, though, that is my sport of choice and passion. And to answer your question, I'll put it in context as to what I like about it. So cycling allows me to socialize with people when I want to or when I need to with other cyclists. It gives me the ability to compete, and so there's a competition level that, you know, I think all of us need an outlet to be able to release that pent up energy from our day job, and also there's the focus part of it, which is if you're working through a physical a need from a physical perspective or a health perspective, you have a goal to be able to target and work towards building your body to that level itself. But I think the part that I really do enjoy about cycling is the ability also, you know, on a very ad hoc basis, take my bike and go out and be by myself listening to a podcast like this, or just thinking about things that I might need to solve and just kind of clear the head and kind of ponder. And we have great trails here in the Pacific Northwest, miles and miles of trail. So I could actually hop on a trail and write in solitude for miles and miles and think about a business problem or a technology, or listen to a podcast to learn a little bit more about something that I'm not aware of. So it is a very good multitasking kind of activity that allows me to meet my physical requirements from a workout perspective, and also helps me from a spiritual basis, and also helps me from a mental and as well as a education perspective, as I can listen to a lot of experts. For example, for our listeners out there, we do have an Azure Friday podcast out there that talks about technology, snippets of technology, and those sessions are about 15 to 30 minutes long, and it helps you get a 100 level of what the technologies may be out there. And you know, you may not be an expert right off the bat, but give you a decent understanding of what those are. So those are things that I would probably listen to. I'll pick the topic and say, that's kind of interesting. I've never heard about that topic before. I wonder what that is. And then I would actually download it, and I'll listen to those topics one after the other and stream them as I'm riding along in solitude. And then I would take a make a mental note of any that might be relevant. And then when I'm back at my desk during times that would allow me to delve deeper into the technology, I would then go ahead and prioritize them accordingly and kind of delve into those. So that is why I picked that as a choice. And I think that's kind of how I end up writing many, many miles, because I probably got a lot of I got a long playlist, and it requires me to listen to all of those back to back, and it really makes the time go by quite a bit. So using that as an example, I'm a big fan of trying to find activities that allow me to multitask, because I do have a family, and all of us do, and I do know that based on the type of work that we do and all of our listeners do, even if they're not part of Microsoft but they are running operation side, it is quite important to be able to find activities that allow one to at least stay abreast of the developments in technology without any compromise to their, you know, to their personal life. And that's kind of how we find a work-life balance. I see that as threefold, right? There's work, then there's personal enrichment, and then there's family that you try to spend. So that is kind of the three major pieces, I think, in one's life. And I think there are many opportunities, aside from just riding your bike, I think there are other activities out there where you might be able to try to overlap all three into a single activity that would help you cover all three of them at the same time. There may not be a lot of them, but I'm very confident they exist, and that's kind of how I would recommend most folks try to manage the time, and that's how I actually try to manage my time.
I love it. I'm not sure about the others, but for me personally, I'm now super inspired to bike, and especially the fact that you talked about, you know, how you can multitask, and you get the benefit of learning. At the same time, you also get your fitness benefits, and like you said, the focus, which is amazing. I have to go with my checklist that start bicycling soon.
Definitely, Anand. And just to digress, it's actually very interesting. There has been a number of times, and you can probably attest to it, I've tried to help a customer with a, for example, a script or trying to help architect a solution, and I would actually hit a roadblock and a wall, and I would be working on it, and it just frustrates me, and I have to put it aside. You know, the famous saying, you know, walk away and come back again. Well, yes. I will ride away and I come back, and it's amazing, because, you know, I know it's cliche, but it really actually does work. And I come back, and I have not had a failure where I've come back and actually very shortly after that, you know, I was able to, I was able to fix it. I saw something that I never saw before, and I've spent hours and hours sitting in front of it, banging my head against the keyboard, and it doesn't really work. And then you come back, and it's so obvious after a very, very short time. So I'm actually amazed by that saying. It's cliche, but it actually really does work.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, as somebody who meditates and also runs, I can definitely attest to that. When all my ideas or all my solutions for the customers, like you said, when I have a roadblock, it only comes, the idea pops in when I don't engage my mind with anything else. And I think that's awesome. Love it. Julian, so I know you've worked, you know, on different clouds, and you've been one of the first cloud solution architects when the cloud solution architect role itself was formed. So you've been in this role for quite a bit, right? So what are some of the challenges that you see and how you overcame them, and what would be your tips for budding new Azure architects?
Oh, definitely. So the challenges of being a Azure Cloud Solution Architect, Anand, is the breadth of technology that's available in Azure today, right? I would say that even though I am fortunate enough to work in all three areas, you know, infrastructure, DevOps, as well as now in the intelligent cloud arena, none of the CSAs out there, even though they are assigned to only one right now, really works in that vertical in a vacuum. And so because there is always going to be a demand for a CSA's service, working with a customer's business problem or solution, a CSA generally would dabble in all three of them because of the dependencies. So for example, infrastructure as a service would provide services that only a VM can provide, or like for example, a legacy system that I mentioned earlier. You know, I started the engagement as a DevOps CSA, right, to talk about application development and DevOps, how to move their new application into Azure in a more strategic fashion with CI/CD, for example. But that was the original. Then it brought me back into infrastructure as a service. So that was how I got engaged. So none of the CSAs, and yourself included, none, you never get sucked into just purely DevOps or purely infrastructure as a service. So I think the biggest challenge is having the ability as a CSA to know all three environments to a certain degree, that you're able to at least carry a conversation and recognize the dependencies from each of those areas. And that is a challenge because of the breadth of knowledge and skill set that you need to possess. However, having said that, that challenge is also what makes the CSA position so unique, exciting, and very desirable for someone who is thirsting to learn about Azure. And when I talk about Azure, I'm really talking about all of Azure, right? You don't have to be an expert on everything, but you actually have to at least know how everything fits together and know what solution, specific solution in Azure or what specific technology in Azure would be able to fix a business problem or deliver a business solution that would require that capability. So that is the challenge. And so for a budding CSA, and when I say that, it could be a CSA in Microsoft or it could be a CSA in a customer, right? We are seeing CSA type roles being very important in the customer as well, because all the operational folks who are designing solutions, so we have architects, software architects or solution architects in customer organizations today, those are all CSA like positions or positions that should transform into the CSA like position, because they are the ones designing solutions for their organizations. So they would actually have to start educating themselves, or at least find the thirst in their personality to kind of learn more about Azure and also about hybrid cloud, which is another level of complexity, a whole different topic that we'll talk about down the road. So that is kind of what they need to do, is to be able to start incorporating a lot of the learning and transformation for their roles as solution architects within their organization itself. So set aside time, they should pick up something that they can help them, be able to learn more about those technologies and kind of evolve accordingly. It is definitely, like you mentioned, Anand, challenging. Not easy, very time consuming, but I can guarantee you, at least for myself and a lot of you, and like you and a lot of people in our team, it is a very satisfying role, whether it's in Microsoft or at a customer.
Absolutely. Yep. I actually couldn't agree more, especially for the satisfying piece. Yes. So you're right. It does spill over sometimes. Like, most of the time the solution is just not, on one particular vertical. Like, even though it seems like an infrastructure project, there is always a dependency on the other specialization or verticals, if you may, like DevOps and data. And I think it's very, very important to collaborate and, you know, think about the solution. I love that. All right, so Julian, if our listeners need to find you online, right? So what would be the best way that they can get in touch with you? So I am going to put a link to your LinkedIn profile as part of the show notes. But apart from that, is there a way that they can get in touch with you?
Oh, definitely, Anand. And I think the LinkedIn profile and emails within LinkedIn itself is the best way to connect with me and reach out to me. I am very interested always to talk to folks, and especially if they have thoughts on a solution or an idea, or they may have a question. So that is definitely the best way to get a hold of me. Having said that, though, Anand, like yourself and all of us, we travel a lot. And from a work perspective, because we are fortunate enough to work with different customers in different cities, and that's kind of the part that I really like about my role, is being able to meet different people, different cities, different customers. But the travel itself does make responding to emails a little bit more difficult. So I'll preface my invitation by saying, you know, feel free to reach out to myself or Anand or anybody on my team, but please do not be disheartened if the email response don't come or don't come in a timely fashion. My point is that, you know, please do follow up again if you don't hear from me. The other thing that I always say is that, you know, if you have an account team that you work with, an account executive that you work with, that when you reach out to me, those guys are, from account team perspective, are really dedicated, and so their focus and their customer spread is a little bit more focused. So definitely include them in the CC list, because I always rely on them to keep me honest, so they can reach out to me and say, "Hey, Julian, somebody reached out to you. Just want to make sure it didn't fall through the cracks, moving it up to your inbox. You know, can you please help respond?" So that is the preface to my invitation, you know, a pre-apology to say that, you know, that there is a high probability, because of travel, it's really hard to respond 24 to 48 hours, and because we might be tied up in projects. So please don't be disheartened. Please take it as not me ignoring your email. It's just me not being able to manage that part. Haven't figured out how to manage that part of my work-life balance yet.
I think that's very fair, Julian. I think that's a very fair assessment. That's awesome. All right, Julian, I think it is really great talking to you. I always, at least for me personally, you know, you're an inspiration, and I always learn something from you whenever I talk to you. So it is great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming.
Anand, thank you for having me. It really has been fun. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.